In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, and it's time for a special report on sexuality in comics. Yes, the blogosphere and potosphere has been buzzing all week because of some of the story choices in DC Comics' Red Hood and the Outlaws featuring Starfire in a provocative bikini, which upset a lot of Teen Titan fans, and Catwoman, particularly a sex scene between Batman and Catwoman in the last pages of the story. A lot of people got very upset about it. I'm here to discuss it with Newsarama's Vanita Rogers for a couple reasons. One, Vanita spoke to both creators this summer in preview articles about the new 52 from DC. Plus, she's the mother of two daughters, and that was one of the questions that came up in terms of, is this too much sexuality, and how would it affect the depictions of some of these characters when they're presented in all-ages material? Vanita and I discuss that. We talk a little bit about the 52 and some other news that's going on this week, including the introduction of the Amazon Fire and the news that DC has hired Nielsen to conduct surveys of their audience and see what they think of the current DC New 52 and any suggestions that the public wants to make to DC. If you haven't seen the link to the survey, you've got until October 7th to fill it out, and there's a link right on our website at wordballoon.com for you to participate in the survey should you want to. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where they offer a wide selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, omnibus editions, essentials, and more. Check out the variety. It is waiting for you. It's easy to search either by subject, by creator, whether it's artist or writer. You'll find books at great values at InStockTrades.com. Must be news time again because I'm checking in with Vanita Rogers from Newsarama. It's good to talk to you, my friend. I it hasn't been that long, but the blogs are buzzing and we had to talk.
A lot of news.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about the whole 52, I'm happy to, but I really am more interested in the discussion that's going on currently, and I'm trying to choose my words carefully because I don't want to come off the wrong way, because my main point of contention will be explained. Obviously, sex in the mainstream comics is on everyone's mind, on the blogosphere and on podcasts, reviews. We're reading a lot of angry editorials and op-eds. I think it's interesting, and I also think that it kind of leans more towards a fan reaction than what I think is kind of an unfair reaction to publishers of comics in general.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that a lot of the reaction is based on character protection, which we used to call fanboyism, I think. You know, they changed my character. Now I think we can call it fangirlism. I don't know.
Clearly.
But that's not to say there isn't an issue there. I mean, I think, you know, obviously there's something to be discussed, and I certainly – have been trying to skew things that way in my coverage of it. But then again, I'm not a blogger. I think bloggers have to go a bit extreme, and a lot of them have, you know, really good points. But yeah, I think it does seem to be targeted to one publisher when, you know, most publishers are talking to their target audience. It's what they're supposed to do, you know?
Sure. Well, I think, yeah. I mean, obviously the two comics in question are from DC this week, Catwoman and then Red Hood and the Outlaws. It's funny, maybe because of those two snowballs, everyone is bowled over. So and Voodoo isn't as important of a character as Starfire and Catwoman are.
Like I said, I think it's very much, you know, you messed with my character. It's not that the issue isn't important to talk about overall, and sure, certainly there is a bigger issue there, but I think most of the initial kind of knee-jerk reaction was because, whoa, hey, at least in the case of Starfire, you know, you changed our character. In the case of Catwoman, I think it's mostly because of that shocking, you know, final... That was meant to shock. I have no doubt about it.
Of course it was.
But I don't think it was meant to be interpreted as something negative toward women at all.
Well, again, yeah, that's kind of my disappointment, and I agree with your assessment that it's character protection. Well, let's start with Starfire, because maybe that's the one that obviously is hitting a lot of people. You know, I got to be honest. I always felt that Starfire was a one-note character and didn't speak to me. I just wasn't a fan. Doesn't matter.
I have no problem with the way that she was interpreted. And it always seemed to me that sex was always part of the quote, you know, the makeup of Starfire and sexuality. And yeah, this is an extreme difference, but I think at the roots, it's a fair choice if we're starting again at square one.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that it's a choice for me. And I, you know, after talking about people's character protection being a little extreme at times, I don't want to go there. I did think it was a little off from what I would expect from a character. But I think that the whole point of that comic is kind of people who don't quite fit in, people who don't quite fit the mold of a hero. And so I think it was a try at, okay, if we're going to make her kind of an anti-hero or kind of a different from what people think of as a hero, what avenue can we take? Right. Like I say, I'm not sure that I particularly like the avenue that was taken, but I understand kind of what he was going for, you know?
Right. And I have no problem with the market dictating that this was a wrong step.
Right.
And, you know, the market will correct that step. That's fine. But I guess it is, again, it's that character protection and how dare they. The blanket statement that really bothers me is, A, comics are for everyone or should be for everyone. And I agree with that. But I think if you limit a character, then you're really not saying that comics should be for everyone. I don't think when I read a bad Sherlock Holmes story, I don't damn the, you know, the writer for screwing up my character. I wait till, you know, the next writer comes and says something better. Now, when we're talking about sex and specifically about Starfire, I guess lines were drawn. I mean, you know, I watched Teen Titans Go. I love Tiny Titans. And I think that there is a child's version of Starfire that's perfectly fine if they choose to continue down that path. If not, I think there are decades of material to delight any child as they grow up and become a tween and point them in that direction. I don't see any problem with, if you're tearing down and trying to rebuild a character, taking a different direction. Again, understanding that if it's not for everybody, that's okay. And again, if the majority thinks better Starfire stories and more popular and more selling Starfire stories should be told with a cleaner Starfire, all right.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's tough, though, to understand the I think people are used to, I should say, when a character is portrayed a certain way, there's usually a lot of protection about the way that character is portrayed. Certainly Disney leads the pack in this. If, you know, Mickey Mouse is portrayed in a way that is not in line with what Disney has outlined as what Mickey Mouse should be, then that Disney wouldn't let it go out there. And if somebody else was doing it, they would sue their butt. There's, you know what Mickey Mouse is. Maybe that's a bad example. I'll say Aladdin. You know what Aladdin is and who he is.
Okay.
You know what type of audience Aladdin is for, or Cinderella or whatever. So it gets a little confusing, and I think that there's a good point to it when you look from a marketing perspective at a character and say, okay, so what is the message behind this character? And I think with Starfire, because of Teen Titans Go, they did go after a certain audience and a certain message of who that character is, and this is a really different one. I felt the effects of that somewhat myself when my daughter was so into Mary Jane Watson that she dressed up as Mary Jane Watson at a convention. She adored the Mary Jane comic, which later became Spider-Man, loves Mary Jane. She read the Mary Jane novels. I don't know if you remember when Marvel was doing the novels for teens. This
sure.
was all happening, and she decided she wanted Mary Jane statues because I liked statues. She saw my statues and wanted – so we started getting Mary Jane statues. Well, then they came out with this statue that had Mary Jane bent over with her rear end up, you know, in a very provocative pose,
right,
washing Spider-Man's costume on a washboard with her cleavage hanging out. And all of a sudden it made me very uncomfortable as a parent. And I could not help but wonder, okay, who exactly is Mary Jane Watson? You're marketing these teen novels. Who are you saying this character is? So I think that's some of the problem from a kind of standardizing who the character is across, you know, their market. But we as comic book readers, I think, understand that there can be four different versions of Superman, and we're cool with it. You know, the bad Superman, the good Superman, or the sexy Mary Jane and the not so sexy Mary, you know. But I think that's where the kind of the confusion lies from a marketing standpoint, and certainly from a general audience standpoint, is who is that character. And the Starfire they're showing in this comic clearly is not the Starfire.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm really glad you brought up Mary Jane, because that's a very fair point. And my response back, as you said yourself, the comic readers understand the differences. Until the general audience really stands up and objects to this, did your daughter ever see the statue of Mary Jane?
No, definitely not.
Right.
You know, I never showed it to her. I mean, I did. Right. She didn't know about it. She was a little kid.
Right.
I know now she would be very uncomfortable with it. My kids, for some strange reason, are even more modest than I am. And she's, practically an adult. But that's my
girl. I get that. No, I totally understand that. And really, I don't mean to sound patronizing, but I can appreciate that on discomfort from a parent. But I guess my point is that I don't want these characters restricted by any standards.
No, I totally understand. And really, kind of in hindsight, I see that my reaction was a little ridiculous. But I at the time was not.
But it's visceral. I mean, that's the thing. I don't expect anyone who was offended by what they've read this week or in your Mary Jane scenario. I don't want anyone to apologize. It's obviously it's a feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, and I get that. I guess, again, I don't mean to sound like, high horse or anything like that, but really, it's like, it's okay to tell a bad story. And I also would like these guys to feel like these characters are flexible enough that you can push them in any direction.
Right.
And obviously, I know you feel that way. And most comic readers are cool with certain characters, but it's interesting to see where the line falls.
Yeah, it is. As comic book readers, and in particular, I think even longtime comic book readers, we like it when comics approach the art form in a way that kind of pushes the envelope, tries something new, tries something different with the characters. In particular, superhero comics, we like it to be as, edgy as possible. We want to see that it's literature, that they're trying new approaches and things like that. But that's where I'm saying that I think therein lies a problem when you're using franchise characters to do that, who have certain expectations of who they are. And there is from a marketing standpoint, you have a problem with Batman laying there like that. I think you probably have more of a problem with that, quite frankly. Oh, we're talking about – I'm sorry. I switched to another comic.
That's fine.
My point is that – and it's the same thing with a Starfire. They're not just literature. They're a property, and they're a – property marketed to young people and even to, like I say, a mainstream audience. And I know mainstream audience isn't flocking to read comic books, but I think a lot of people were kind of hoping with the new 52 they would. So I think there's just not quite an understanding of, wait a minute, who are you? Who is this person? Who is this character? And so I can understand the reaction being a little bit, I'm going to coin a new phrase here, fangirlish, the character protection. And I think some of that is based on, wanting these characters to be who DC has marketed this property to be. So I think that's where some of that comes from. I know there's a whole lot more to this discussion than that, but I do think that's part of it. And I do think that's a bit of the confusion. I think you remember probably the whole Kirkman manifesto, where he talked about superheroes should be, something that's for kids, and that if you want to write these adult, mature, different genre comics and aim them toward adults, that should be something different, not these properties that are marketed across many media. And I think that some of what he was saying is exactly what we're kind of reacting to, because these properties are marketed to kids in one arena, or actually many different, media and toy stores, et cetera, et cetera. And yet that's kind of a different, a whole different ballgame when you're like approaching it as this edgy literature. Let's make her pose by the pool in a bikini. It'd be really cool. I'm all for comics trying whatever they want to try, but I think when you're doing it with a franchise character, you get in a little trouble.
And that's fair from the fan base. I understand that. I also think that there are very few avenues, given that all of these, as you say, these properties are marketed in the different ways that they are, from birthday, you know, napkins and plates to, you know, bed sheets and pajamas and the like. I do think that, again, there's only a few places to tell stories and be edgy. And I don't have I just don't see a problem saying that these are the properties, or this is the way the property is being marketed to children. That's fine. I said this on Twitter. By the time that some of these 7-year-olds who are being subjected to these Stargirl pictures actually get older and you know, would understand it a little bit better, they're not going to care. They're going to be blips. There's such a short little moment of the character. And again, I think the market will fix that. I also think that this is the first chapter of both books. Who's to say that Stargirl may, you know, soften as she becomes a little, you know, less alien? Because again, they're kind of starting at the beginning with her.
Right.
Or seem to. I mean, certainly that was the narrative in the book. And we'll get to Catwoman in a second. But yeah, I just I understand. I just think that there is plenty of stuff to direct a kid to.
Well, and as still, a reader, you know, and I gotta believe that most of the people who are blogging about this also would agree with me. We don't want superhero comics to be restricted by, you know, one person's idea of what's okay to do with a certain character. You know, I'm obviously, there are some limits on, I would assume, a Superman or Spider-Man to some extent, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I think we just really like it when they push the limits on those things, and
I agree.
We don't like it when their hands are tied. So I got to agree with you that, you know, the fan in me who enjoys superhero comics because they take those chances doesn't want to see them restricted. I'm just pointing out that when you have that, You know, if Disney published a Disney Adventures magazine with Cinderella, you know, in a bikini by a pool.
Hey, we had how about Alan Moore's Lost Girls?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, there's a lot of interpretations of those of characters, but I think that you can run into problems when you do that.
Oh, I understand, but I also think, again, and it's funny, I that really just occurred to me when you said Cinderella, because Disney, I get
they don't own
Disney
Cinderella,
comparison.
But you know, right. You know what I mean, like that, something that they do own, I should say.
Well, but even no, but I understand what you're saying, and I do think that Mickey Mouse and those things are at a different standard, because they always were,
right.
Although they were made for mass audiences as well. But it was an innocent time, and you're not going to tell. You could,
well,
I suppose.
Well, but you could even say that about, I don't know, Bug's Life or Nemo.
Sure.
If you all of a sudden put out a Nemo adult comic with fish having sex, you know.
Finding Dirty Nemo.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, you could understand that people go, wait, that's not what Nemo is,
but,
you know. So.
But I guess in the – again, Starfire always was a sexual character.
I agree.
Dick Grayson's first.
I think I had more – honestly, more ground to stand on with Mary Jane, because when that statue came out,
right.
It was concurrently being marketed in a completely different way, and in a big way, really.
But in fairness,
Starfire
again,
is not being marketed that way. Teen Titans Go has been off the air. I mean, I'm sure there's still reruns, but it's done, you know? So we're back to the Starfire the way she was, half naked. And, you know, I mean, she is, you know.
And also, too, Mary
Jane. It's not even half. She's more like
she's a straight bikini.
7'8".
Absolutely. Oh, no, absolutely. And the other thing about Mary Jane too is, let's not forget, Mary Jane was the party girl.
Right. I know.
And I mean that's – and I would say, and as we transition to Catwoman – Catwoman was portrayed to begin with as, again, a dragon lady. I mean, that was the contemporary comparison at the time. And she's really one of these archetypal, iconic bad girls that led to I think she predates Sans Serif from Will Eisner. I'm pretty sure she does, because that was in Batman number 1 in 1940. The first appearance of Catwoman. And if not, she's certainly a contemporary. And like I said, the dragon lady precedes her. Elektra and Daredevil. I mean, there are bad girls all over the place. Catwoman has always been a bad girl. And I wanted to point out what Judd said in your interview. And I've got the quotes right here. It's a very sexy title. It's a very violent title. For lack of a better word, it's one of the edgier titles coming out of the DCU. This is a tough, sexy, violent, somewhat over-the-top book, which is everything Catwoman should be. And I will tell you right from the jump, this is not Wonder Woman. This is not Supergirl. And I'll continue if we need to, but there's a better part, because I also think that what people – as disappointed in that sex scene with Batman at the end of the book, I get it. And I don't mean like, hey, message granted, you know, message received, thank you. No, I mean I really get it from a character standpoint. These are two very messed up people. And also Judd just wrote that Under the Red Hood miniseries and had Talia, another bad girl, sleeping with Jason Todd. And people went, whoa. And it's like, yeah, you're supposed – and he explained it. I remember. He's like, you're supposed to go, these are sick people.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I didn't have a problem with the Catwoman comic. I mean, I obviously – I did. I mean, I totally understood what it was for. I think the problem was that so much – many parts of her body were shown. You know, I think that's – I think that was the best – I don't even remember whose blog post that was, but it was about how her face wasn't shown. It was so many body parts. I totally understand that. I don't think the comic as a whole was doing anything particularly wrong with that character. I don't think that probably in the Catwoman case it was about protecting the character of Catwoman, because she's always been, you know, I don't know about always. I think at times she wasn't, but she certainly always had a bit of that in her, the sexy cat-like persona, just like Black Cat over at Marvel, you know?
But I also think, and I'm looking for the paragraph as we're speaking, because we haven't gotten there yet in the story. And I don't mean to, because I really hate people who guess what the next chapter will be. But given that it's called The Morning After, not many happy things are titled The Morning After, whether it's that terrible Maureen McGovern song or, of course, the drug that sometimes is used after a night of fun. There aren't usually pleasant Morning After titles. And I have a feeling that this is going to be a character who it messes up. And part of that mess up is this very, you know, physical relationship with Batman.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. I think she's going to be – I even said this on Twitter the other day. I think she might be very much like Starbuck on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think there's obviously more story there. I think a lot of people who reacted to it didn't actually read the comic. I polled several creators about – sexism in comics, and I yes. noticed that nobody mentioned specific comics, and the few that did said, I haven't read it, but so I think a lot of people who are talking about it really didn't just sit back and read the comics. I think that last scene was just so shocking that it kind of sent your brain into a little bit of overdrive. It was meant to be shocking, but
right.
Judd completely warned us in that interview, if anybody read my interview with him, he
and
totally
honestly,
warned you what you were going to see, and it was exactly what he said it was going to be.
And the only reason why I bring all this up is he also said it at the panels in San Diego
yeah.
and every other interview that he gave before the book came out. And while I understand the general public may not get those interviews, I'm guessing the people listening to this podcast care enough that they are reading the blogs, and they are listening and reading what people said in panels and in interviews. This is the other thing he says. She's a bit of an anti-hero. She doesn't chase down bad guys. She's a thief and she steals things, but is she hunting down people and killing them? Will she murder people? No, that's not who she was or who she is. Excuse me. She's someone who has deep, deep problems. She runs around in a cat suit, feels the need to steal for the thrill of doing that and getting mixed up in situations that almost get her killed. She's got big problems, and this is how she's dealing with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think I'm excited for that in the thrill of an interesting story way that, you know, and yeah, they're going to play up the sexuality. I mean, that's the thing. I really think that they're obvious choices. And again, I also think that Batman being the dysfunctional person that he is, I think it makes sense. Heroes like the bad girl. It happens. And I'm sure we're going to see. Again, I look forward to what issue two brings, because I'm sure that there's going to be, at the very least, some pleasantries. I mean, this is Buffy and Angel waking up after their first night.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
I did what? I just slept with what? You know, which again, she says in the book that it's not the first time. And it, that's the thing. I think they've done this before. God, they just did it in Batman Incorporated.
I guess. But, you know, there's just this part of me really didn't want to see it. I think that's the big problem that everybody really, I mean, do we really have to see it? And
you know, it was four pages, and honestly, I broke it down to each page really does kind of represent a movie beat. I mean, that's the thing. I understand people's discomfort, and I suppose it could have all been done in one page or half a page.
Or just, you know, say it happened. I don't know.
Well, and I honestly love the parody reactions that we've seen from, I want to say, Cody Chamberlain, and I know Phil Noto. Phil Noto's one was fantastic. The two of them sitting on the couch, one's asleep, the other one's watching Saturday Night Live. I mean, that was – and likely that may be how Winnick opens up issue two. Who knows? But that's what – I mean, honestly, I guess, as you said, it's that character protection in fans that I understand – And absolutely, they have every right to be angry. But I just don't want to see the characters limited. That's my point. Oh, and I really am. I appreciate the ambition of some of these directions, whether they succeed or fail. I remember 10 years ago when Bendis started Alias. There was a pretty shocking sex scene in that issue, too.
Yes, there was.
And Jessica Jones ended up being, I think, quite a very interesting, complex character.
Right.
And would have been without that scene.
Right, right. That's a give it a chance, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
they may be
exactly
behind this. Then, and like I said, I don't think people even gave the whole comic a chance. I think the images kind of hit the Twitterverse and the internet, and that was what started the fire raging, and everyone was burning so hot that by the time they sat down and read the comic, it was way too late. So, yeah, I'm sorry, but I do think that there is something to talk about as far as the artwork, the costuming of female characters. There is something to talk about there as far as sexism and why they're a little off-putting to, I think nowadays, even male audiences to some extent when you're talking about if you're going after younger readers. I mean, I would hope that – I don't know, that some of that just seems a little silly to anyone. Maybe I'm overestimating the intelligence of younger male readers, but I would just have to think that some of it, if you're going to go quite that over the top with the boobs busting out of the costumes, that it isn't going to have the message that this is really good literature pushing edgy, cool stuff. It's going to come across as kind of silly, but maybe that's like I say, maybe I'm overestimating people.
I would answer back with that. I think since, you know, the pulp days, there's always been eye candy on the cover and any illustrations for this kind of action adventure story, whether it's a detective or even the superhero. So I really don't have a problem with the cheesecake, and I also think that it's not everybody. I mean,
no.
I think there were, and I know you would agree with me, and I know even, and I have to say this, the bloggers that I took exception with have even pointed out there were very good portrayals of women in this new 52.
Yeah, I mean, Carol Ferris had her clothes on the whole time. So what's your problem? I don't get
Lois
it.
I thought Lois Lane was shown to be very strong as far as another civilian character.
Exactly.
I loved Wonder Woman. I thought Cliff knocked it out of the park artistically. Brian told an exceptional story. You know, I'm trying, you know, Harley Quinn. I mean, come on, I understand now they've slutted her up, but also that is the computer game,
right? That's who she is. I mean, she kind of, you know, that's the way she always came across anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, granted, there was more costume and stuff, but it's like, all right, whatever. Again, I just, it's always been a part of comics, and I think to deny that, I don't think covering a superheroine or superhero for that matter from head to toe, it's anybody's choice. And I don't know, like I said, I guess again, I'm Uncle Buck, you know, I'm single, don't have kids, I'm, you know, and maybe I just really think, again, it comes down to limitations on character, and let the market decide as far as that kind of thing
well
goes.
But I do think that there's there is some basis behind much of this discussion. I think there is, I mean, if you look back at, and I hate that everyone talks about 90s comics like there's something negative, because a lot of the characters and a lot of even the comics that I've come to love came out in the 90s. But there was a real, seems like there was a lot more TNA, you know, going
yes.
on. And
yeah.
I think that that does have a bit of negativity to it in a more mainstream audience. And if you really are trying to win people over to comics, I don't know that this is the way to do it. I agree with you that, you know, let the market work it out kind of thing. But at the same time, I think people really wanted DC to be smart with this initiative and put their best foot forward. And I think some people think that this isn't the best foot. And I do agree with you, that the story in Catwoman certainly seems like it's going somewhere. And I kind of liked it. I was not a big fan of some of the artistic portrayals, but that certainly had nothing to do with the writer. That's the artist and probably the editorial direction, you know, let's
yes.
sex it up a little bit. So,
yeah.
I don't like that. Like you said, Judd made it very clear. So I think Judd has been vilified a little unjustly on this, because I do think it's going somewhere, but yeah, I mean, I do think that there's something to discuss, because I would like to see comics go a different way, and I don't mind it if editors get the message to be smart in their portrayal of women. If that comes out of this discussion, then I'm fine with that. Some things that seem to be coming out of this discussion that would be negative is includes what you're talking about, limitations on characters. We certainly don't want to see them only look like the characters from Teen Titans Go, obviously. And I also get a little concerned when there is so little attention paid to the fact that comics are experiencing a shrinking market. There's a reason for this initiative, and it's not
sure.
just to dump old readers and dump male readers and go hog wild after people who have never shown an interest in comic books. That would be very bad business. And so I think that, you know, this expectation that all of a sudden comics were going to look completely different and abandon the expectations of people of what comics are is just a little ridiculous. So, you know, I think that that's, to me, that's one of my fears, is that a little bit too much negativity about what comics are. This is what comics are. This is why we all fell in love with comics. And, you know, it's a really bad time to be trying to force the hands of publishers to experiment to that nth degree when we're trying to hold on to the readers we got and add some more, you know?
I do, but I also think that when Marvel, you know, 10 years ago, not only with the Ultimate line, but things like the Tsunami line as well, and a lot of the choices that they made on their mainstream characters, maybe not as much, not as sexual as some of the choices we're seeing currently at DC, but I think when those things didn't work, they faded. Who remembers the failed Namor?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree.
You know,
I
Little
agree.
Mermaid kind of
I think this
series.
Will become down the line Much Ado About Nothing, and we'll see all characters
yeah.
having sex right there on the page. Now, let's hope not. I'm kidding.
Well, but also, and the other thing too is, I'm a huge fan of Criminal, and Criminal just finished a very sexual story.
Mm-hmm.
That Last of the Innocent, mm-hmm. and which, you know, was pretty much a parody of Archie or Binky or those kind of teen comedy comics of the 40s and 50s,
mm-hmm.
and that's why it's like, but you know, I guess Ed was okay because it was a parody, and you know, it really was an Archie, and that was okay. I wouldn't expect to see that kind of dark Archie. You know, Archie's doing it in a great way right now.
Yeah.
Those adult Archie stories, I love those.
Yeah.
They're funny. They're great soap opera. And they're even suggesting it's not happening, but certainly there's the implication of maybe Archie's having an affair on Veronica.
Right, right.
Which he's not, but even that they're even suggesting it. Well, it's very funny what's okay and what isn't. And they're staying, I think, on the right side of, I think, proper taste, no one would really question that. I think infidelity is unfortunately a fact of life. And again, it's being geared towards an adult audience. But there's a line that's doing that with their characters, kind of pushing the limits, still putting out kids' fare as well. I don't see any ripples. I don't see anybody yelling
about
it.
Well, no, it's because – it's all because of all the publicity behind these 52 number ones. If – I won't even say if, because there's no if. We do see this in other comics. We see it all the time. Where are the screams about Vampirella, for crying out loud? Yep. You know? So, okay, those things exist. Why is this setting off such a huge torch? It's because of all the publicity. It's because of expectations that, I don't know, somehow they were just going to be so very different and they were going to fulfill all your fantasies about what
exactly.
A great comic would be. And they're not. They're experimenting with different things and, you know.
But that's – they're throwing everything at the wall. And I honestly applaud
them
for that.
Yeah.
Because they're going in
good.
Every possible – exactly.
I'm surprised,
that's the thing.
Honestly.
They've taken chances with genre. They've taken chances with character. They've taken chances with levels of sex and violence. The only thing I would honestly say they should have been a little clearer with, their rating system is very confusing. Teen Plus doesn't tell me what it is. When I read the definition of Teen Plus, appropriate for readers age 16 and older, may contain moderate violence, mild profanity, graphic imagery, and or suggestive themes.
Mm-hmm.
That and Catwoman and Red Hood were 16 plus books.
Right.
I might want to point out that Voodoo was also a 16 plus.
Right.
And I thought Voodoo, given that they kept their clothes on, was even more – certainly more sexual than the other two.
Yes.
By the way, Mature is appropriate for readers 18 and older, may contain intense violence, extensive profanity, nudity, sexual themes, and other content suitable only for older readers. And that's it.
Right. Well, and DC's response to all of the, you know, fury over this was make sure you pay attention to the ratings. And quite frankly, I was I was glad when DC put the rating system in place. There was a time when they didn't really tell you what a comic was going to be inside. And
sure.
there were a lot worse things. I remember some things.
I remember Carol, by the way, Carol Ferris, who kept her clothes on in Green Lantern number one.
Yeah.
I remember years ago as Star Sapphire, her disrobing and exposing herself to Hector Hammond as this kind of tease and knowing that him and paralyzed in the chair couldn't do anything about it. And it's like, whoa. And this was like, I'm pretty sure in the 80s or 90s. And I was like, that's interesting. I don't know if it's necessary. But I mean, that's the thing. I think, like you said, I mean, it has been going on for a long time and it's good that they are doing the ratings. Yeah, I do think that they needed to be, they could be a little clearer. And honestly, I mean, I hate censorship. I don't think it's censorship. I think it is fair to let a consumer know what they might be getting before they crack open.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a case. Oh, I don't remember when it was. Poor Judd. I think it was an issue of his. I think it was Outsiders where some retailer kind of went on a rant because he didn't know Outsiders was going to have a sex scene in it.
Oh, yeah.
He had sold some grandmother a. You remember that?
Absolutely, I do.
Like I said, this isn't the first time we've seen a sex scene.
Well, and certainly within the month, we saw the retailer in North Carolina get upset with GD from Superman in Action Comics 1. Well, let's end on a happy note. Do you want to – I mean, what do you, have you read everything? Have you had time to read everything from this week as well?
Not this week, no. I've read, most everything. From the month. I can't say that I've read every single thing, but yeah, I mean, I have a little stack I haven't read, but.
Well, again, we just said this, but for just coming out with 52 books, I think there were more successes than failures. And honestly, I really think that it broke down to a typical kind of, there are some good books in here. There's some exceptional books. There's some clunkers and there's just some decent books.
Definitely. And I think, I was a little surprised how many exceptional and very good books there were. And
I agree.
I mean, I obviously they're just the number one. So I don't necessarily, I don't think anybody is ready to say, oh, you know, the quality's gone way up. They had a lot of lead time on these number ones. They had a lot of eyes looking at them. They wanted their best foot forward. And I think that they did a pretty good job of that. Obviously, you know, the question is, will that quality be there going forward? And
absolutely.
Yeah, that's totally unrelated to what we were talking about, but very true. And there's no doubt it was a huge sales success. No
Absolutely.
Doubt whatsoever. I don't know that digital was quite as successful. When I interviewed John Rood and Bob Wayne, my feeling was that digital was about where they expected, while print was way, way above what they expected. And
Have you heard them react at all to my question that I asked all summer about why aren't you making one-click purchases available of trades? And it was interesting that after I spoke to John Rood and Bob Wayne, and John had said that's years away for DC, suddenly Marvel introduced a bunch of one-click purchases for various trades.
Yeah, I don't know that – I bet you it's not as far away as they think, because I know that Comixology does it for other publishers.
Of course. Well, and also, as we're speaking today, Amazon introduced the Fire Kindle.
Oh, yeah.
And that's interesting. And suddenly we have a tablet that's half the price of an iPad.
Right, yeah.
And from a comics functionality standpoint, it looks like it will be, you know, Comixology is right there on their apps page.
Yep. Yeah, I think that the you know, it's completely a new ball game for digital comics the day the iPad came out. And one of the first things, you know, that I remember reporting on was it once Apple does something, everybody else is doing it too. And it just completely opens up the market for that product. Not the first tablet we had ever seen, but once Apple does it and does it in a big way, that's not the last tablet you see, and they're everywhere. And that's a great thing for digital comics.
Yeah.
Because that's the right platform for digital comics. Computers is not the right platform unless the format were to greatly change, which, you know, certainly people try to do with web comics. But the way that comics are structured and the way people expect comics to the layout of comics to be, you know, computer screens aren't made for that, but e-readers totally are.
Absolutely. No, it's interesting, and yeah, we'll see what happens as those steps move forward, as those plans move forward. That's all I had, pal. I didn't want us to agree.
Well,
I wanted to understand it from a person who, honestly, you're a parent,
yeah.
and I understand that, and I really do. I wanna understand this view. I just, as I said, I don't think every character should be limited to be a role model or to be completely sanitized. And I thought we got a good cross section of good role models in the new 52 and a lot of people that suck. But I think the important thing is, will they make interesting stories? And that's really all I want. I want interesting stories. I don't need role models.
Well,
and I do,
like, one thing you didn't talk about is that these issues also hit at the time when everyone was talking, or has been talking actually for a couple months, about the lack of female creators. And so I think that there was already some fuel ready to go for that fire, because I think everyone acknowledges that maybe, well, the reason that there aren't more female creators is because more women aren't reading comics. And the reason more women aren't reading comics is, and among those different, you know, reasons is the fact that comics are seen as something for boys. Comics are seen as sexist, or having sexist images, these unrealistic images of women. And so I think it's connected. I know it's loosely connected, but it is connected. And so I think that there was already this kind of growing network of female bloggers and people and some male bloggers talking about this whole issue. So once these two comics hit with such high publicity behind them, because they were part of the initiative,
yeah.
I think,
here we go,
you know,
again.
Well, it was like, see, that's,
sure.
You know,
absolutely.
That's what we've been talking about for the last 2 months. So I think, you know, that was part of the reasoning, like that would, I think the thought is that wouldn't happen if you had a female creator, which of course we know isn't true because
of course
birds, of,
talk
birds
to
of prey was,
talk to,
you remember Ed Benes, the way he
six.
Would draw Huntress getting on her motorcycle. Woo! But I know.
But also, well, and honestly, in Birds of Prey as well.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. Birds
Gale's
of Prey,
no,
yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, rather Secret
and
Six.
Secret Six, Six, right.
Yeah, Gale is no, you know, and I'm really glad you got Gale on record talking about the fact she's like, hey, I like sexuality in comics. And that's the thing. I think it's, I get it, and I understand. I just, like I keep saying, I don't think it's right to demand that every book needs to point in one direction.
No,
And I think that with the frustration of some of these stories, as I said, I think Wonder Woman had a very positive portrayal. I haven't read Supergirl yet. I got to be honest, so I can't speak to Supergirl. Batgirl certainly had any negative qualities to it from a positive female.
No, I saw nothing in Supergirl nor in Batgirl in that way. I mean, not extreme, let's put it that way. I mean, obviously you could, I don't know, depending on how extreme of a feminist you are, you could find something, you know, wrong in every costume, I suppose. But no, I didn't see anything wrong with most of these books, but I have a high tolerance for this stuff.
I don't know. You know, I mean, like I said, I understand everyone's personal tastes. I respect that. I just, like I say, I don't impress it. Don't put your, you know, frustrations on every comic because I just think it limits the medium, and I don't want that to happen. And I do think there needs to be more. And I think that they are. And also, I mean, you tell me. I mean, you're the one that's been talking to the women in comics in your series and stuff. Weren't several of these like women being, you know, approached to work on 52? I know I've talked to a few that were and couldn't for either time right. problems or weren't interested in the books that they were being offered.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I've talked to men who had the, you know, they were offered books and weren't interested in them or time and women. Yes, there were more women offered books in the September initiative. I hope that people have realized that whole, you know, all the ruckus, I guess, is for lack of a better word. I use that today in the story I wrote, but the, you know, all of the talk about there being some kind of a decrease in the number of female creators, that was way overblown. It wasn't from lack of trying on DC's part, and it wasn't from lack of female creators working at DC, because they do have other female creators working at DC. They're just working on something that's going to start a little bit later. But yeah, honestly, a lot of the female creators I talk to think that this is, they're just really tired of the discussion. And I almost felt bad because I, you know, I would have to break it to them. Well, it's a series over several, you know, several weeks. And sure. They were like, oh, you've got to be kidding me, you know, because
I thought we were done.
I mean, it just, you know, I think that they think there's a lot bigger problems in comics than this one.
Like?
Well, for example, Christina Strain said, instead of talking about if it's hard for a woman to get a job in comics, talk about how hard it is for colorists to get jobs and how tough it is, you know, just overall, you know, she's like, I'm in the same boat as the guy colorists. And, you know, Jen Van Meter, it was, talking about how we really need to come up with a way to, save comics overall and get comics into the comics that are made for kids into the hands of younger kids. We need to get with librarians and schools. And if, you know, I think that a lot of them feel like if these bloggers who well-intentioned, but if they would take this passion that they feel for these characters and this issue and put it toward some issues where you can really make a difference and you know, help comics. Certainly part of the discussion is making them more kid friendly, woman friendly, whatever friendly. That's definitely part of the discussion. But I think, you know, some of the furor over why aren't there more women in comics gets a lot of these female creators kind of rolling their eyes. They're like, we're here. Okay. Now, can we
Thank
please
you.
Go on and talk about comics in general. So
yeah, let's get past square one. No, I agree. And it's whenever I speak to women creators, I hate the glass ceiling conversation because, as you say, they're there. They are working. They are represented. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what DC's Nielsen ratings experiment proves. I think that's very interesting.
I thought so too. Yeah. I'll be interested to seeing that. I don't know. Are they going to make that public or is that just for their
Well, I think possibly to defend some of their choices, they might and say you got or, you know, I don't know. I probably not. Actually, who am I kidding? It's funny that they revealed as much as they did about the digital to you, Rude and Wayne, because that's been a very interesting from all the publishers. The only exception to that is Ted Adams from IDW.
Right.
I think Ted Adams has been incredibly candid.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been to the seminars where he said, no, they only, digital represents 3% of our gross.
Right.
And it's like, well, that's very, thank you, Ted. That's pretty clear.
Well, and I think that's pretty representative, of
everybody
publishers. Yeah. It's definitely in the single digits and then the low single digits from what I understand, very much so. It's a very small part of overall publishing.
Sure. But we're at square one.
Exactly. Well, you got to believe it'll only get bigger.
And
certainly as that market grows, because digital publishing market overall, I'm talking books and everything else, there's no doubt that's growing like crazy over the last few years and is only going to go up. So you got to get comics in there. So they're going the right direction, all these different publishers that are trying, different distributors, different devices, just kind of dabbling here and there and seeing what sticks, because we really aren't sure yet,
There you go. All right. I like it. I don't want to keep you awake.
I know. We keep getting off on these other tangent conversations.
But honestly, I believe that a lot of this all dovetailed from what we've seen from these first – from the 52 – and now that they're finished, we'll see how the stories progress. But it does kind of touch all these things. I mean, like I said, the Amazon Fire is going to play a part in all this. I think whether they reveal the numbers or not, it'll be interesting to see what Nielsen.
Well, and I think that's – I think digital – really, you have to think about a digital audience. And I think you almost have to have something sexy and hot and different for that digital audience. And so I can't help thinking, actually, that is a really pertinent thing, because the whole, from what I understand behind the scenes, really the whole idea of the relaunch came about after DC decided to go day and date.
Digital.
Yeah, day and date.
Okay.
And they said, okay, we need something big where we can market and say, start here. And then the relaunch came. That's my understanding. I don't have that officially and on the record, but it's my understanding that the earliest discussions of it were, we want to go day and date digital. We want to make digital like the new spinner rack. What can we do? And then came the relaunch idea and the whole, well, let's make it just, you got to read comics this month. You got to do it now and you can do it digitally. So if you think of that audience and going after that audience, and like you said, they're throwing a little bit of everything out there and trying to catch as many people as they can. You do kind of think, okay, well, what character do we have that can be kind of the hot, sexy,
Yes.
Feline. Oops. Hey, I know who, so.
And Starfire, too.
Exactly.
Again,
I mean, she's already closed for it. So, or unclosed for it. So,
exactly.
Yeah. When you think of it from that point of view, I certainly see all points of view, but when you think of it from that point of view and that digital audience, and certainly there are a lot of things to look at digitally, from YouTube to everything else that may be termed sexist in some way, shape, or form, but they're out there. So there's an audience.
How many video montages of Adam Hughes covers to a heavy metal song can you think of? Absolutely. Absolutely.
What?
Black Canary. What I just said, absolutely. Seriously, if you look up a character on YouTube, I guarantee.
No, I love that you know about those, though.
Oh, come on. Well, no, again, I'm speaking to all of us who consume comic book news and are constantly looking at YouTube and everything.
Yeah, no, I totally.
Interviews or whatever.
I've seen them too.
And you're, really? Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying, pal. Exactly. I'm not, you know, we're talking to the people who get it. We've all seen it. That's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm a subscriber.
Right.
but I've stumbled across enough of them.
Yeah, and I have daughters who read comics. My oldest really likes comics. I mean, she was reading Brightest Day every 2 weeks. Mom, where's my Brightest Day? You know, so
sure.
I totally understand the point of view that, you know, there is a possibility of young women reading comics. And so you kind of want to see more comics that aim toward that audience. But I think that you also have a point in that that's not the only audience. And why
sure.
limit it?
How old are your daughters?
I have a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old.
And it's the 12-year-old that's interested in comics?
No, it's actually
right?
the 16-year-old.
It's the 16-year-old?
Yeah,
okay.
My 12-year-old has read comics, but she's more interested in books.
That's right. That's the Twilight fan, right?
No. I'm sorry.
Or are they both Twilight
graphic
fans?
Novels. Yeah, they've,
oh,
they've,
excuse
they've
me.
Both read Twilight. But okay. She's more interested in... like Bone and the Baby Mouse and I don't know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid and
okay.
Captain Underpants
sure.
and, you know, stuff like that.
That's cool.
You know, that sort
yeah,
of
fun stuff.
Yeah, it's more of a graphic novel book. She's my avid book reader. The 16-year-old is the huge Twilight fan and huge Harry Potter fan and anything like geeky fandom stuff. So she loves comic books and all the she's got, you know, wants all the Green Lantern, Red Lantern,
okay,
or you know, Orange Lantern rings, and she's totally into that stuff. She takes after her mom.
Has she read either of the controversial books?
No, I don't think they're aimed at her.
I understand. No, I understand that too.
That
I'm just wondering if
that I don't. I you know, honestly, I probably. They're not really aimed at me that much either. Like when
sure.
I said I didn't, you know, I was okay with Catwoman. I probably if I wasn't covering DC Comics and reading things,
sure,
I probably wouldn't continue getting that because I could tell who that audience is, and I don't think it's me, which, you know, I completely understand. I don't think she would enjoy that at all. In fact, I know she wouldn't.
I understand.
My kids are. They are very into church, so
fair enough.
Very,
all right,
very modest girls.
I respect that. Okay. That's fine. No, and honestly, that's the thing, man. I totally appreciate people who felt that that was too far. We've made our points.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to say. So
and I think that brings up another point, though. For example, you know, my kids and my family being Christian, I don't expect all comics to be aimed toward me. I understand there's a bigger audience out there. For example, you know, it's actually a pretty good example there. I know that I'm going to read tons of cool stuff that isn't going to be aimed at my, you know, that specific demographic, and I can enjoy those things. And I think that some people have to keep that open mind from their point of view as well, that there's all kinds of artistic approaches in comic books that may not be specifically aimed at them. Certainly there's a place for the overall discussion. I think there is something for DC and Marvel to think about when they're branding their characters, who is the brand behind that character, as we talked about. But I think also, you know, we kind of have to be careful when we expect everything to speak to us personally in the way that we want it to speak to us.
I appreciate that. And I honestly thank you for providing balance to and answering my questions and you know, being a good counterbalance to what I think needs to be remembered and for providing that perspective.
Well, you're Mr. Anything Goes, I think.
I am Mr. Anything Goes. But again, I do that from the standpoint of I'm always willing to see what these characters, you know, what can be done with them.
Well, I'm going to be really interested in whether DC kind of goes your route or more toward what I'm saying, where they realize that there's a franchise and a property to protect. It'll be interesting to see which direction they go. I don't think they're going to announce it publicly. I think we'll just kind of have to see what happens.
Absolutely. No, this is awesome, Vanita. Seriously, thanks for your time and thank you for the discussion.
All right. Thank you.
That's Vanita Rogers. Since our discussion, I had asked if DC was going to react in any way to Marvel's announcement that they were offering trades as one-click digital purchases. And if you caught the news wires on the last couple days of the week, you might have heard that as part of their introduction of Amazon's Kindle Fire, there is an app, and DC will be making 100 graphic novels and collected stories as one-click purchases. We'll see if they open it up beyond the Kindle. But for now, they will be available coming in November. Pretty interesting, given that John Rood said that that was years away just a couple weeks ago, right here on this podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. If you'd like to participate, I'd love to hear feedback, not only at the TalkBack at WordBalloon.com, the comments section, or you can talk about it on the TalkBack at iFanboy.com. Happy to hear your thoughts on this subject. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks for listening. John Sutcher's reminding you that Word Balloon is all over the place. We, of course, are at iTunes. Any questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com, through Twitter, or under Facebook under my name, John Sutcher. But I would say for this particular subject of what we're talking about today, let's go to the TalkBack channels at ifanboy.com, at my site, wordballoon.com. I think those should suffice. Until next time, thanks again for listening. This episode was brought to you by InStockTrades.com. Great savings on trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. Every kind of comic, every kind of subject will be covered and waiting for you at InStockTrades.com at a great price. Always a great discount off the standard retail price. For more details, go to their website, InStockTrades.com. Thanks a lot for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2011.